Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Hello, No Bad Dog Army. Welcome back to the podcast. This is an excellent podcast if you're dealing with leash reactivity. This is a breed that I don't ever get, which is a good thing, which is why I tell people maybe they should start looking into this breed. It's an Airedale Terrier with pretty bad leash reactivity. And so, again, as you guys know, I would never put out anything that I didn't think was helpful for you guys or too repetitive. So this is all really good information, and I hope you enjoy it. If you guys don't know, I'm going to be in England next month in September. I'm going to be in Australia and New Zealand in November, and I'm going to do a seminar at my facility. I'm also doing a e-collar seminar at the Upstate Canine Academy. All the information for my seminars and workshops are listed in the description below. Enjoy the podcast, and thanks for listening.
It's a seven-year-old Airedale.
Yeah, I always tell people get Airedales because I don't hear any problems with them. So I've worked with them briefly, but I don't see them a lot, which is good.
Well, it's good for many reasons, and it doesn't means that they're not overbred.
Right.
Well, this is my 5th male Airedale. He is my first that has been reactive. All the others have been sweethearts. Ripley, I got him as a puppy, the breeder that I've had forever. And he was a show dog. I had him shown. I find myself somewhat responsible because rather than trying to socialize him before he was shown, I kind of sheltered him a bit, and it was also just before COVID hit. And so he was a little shy around people. He was fine in the ring with 2,000 other dogs around with the handler, but as soon as I picked him up, he was very protective. It's definitely gotten to the point he's not good with people, and he's not good, obviously, with other dogs. So it's very difficult to walk him. In fact, I very rarely walk him. He stays in our backyard, and I exercise him that way. He's a sweet dog around the fam, my husband and me. He's very cautious to the point of I don't trust him around my grandkids.
Okay.
And the other point is, and God forbid anything happens, but if something were to happen to me and I'm alone, nobody could come in to help.
Yeah.
That's how, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So as I said, I had not signed up, but your assistant,
Alyssa,
sent me the two dates, one in July and one in August. And unfortunately, both of them did not work for us. Cause we live, up in Lake George.
Hmm.
We have a house there. So for me, it would have been easy to go down each day.
Yeah.
However, we had a house full of family, and I couldn't take Ripley up.
Okay.
To live. Yeah. So I just, and the other part with him, the poor guy, he is trying to think the word I would use, frightened of thunderstorms, certain smells. If we use the grill outside, he won't go outside because of the smell. And as I said, loud noises, he gets very anxious.
Yeah. Well, that's normal. Dogs getting anxious from the, you know, the thunderstorms and all the fireworks, and that's a normal.
Well, yeah, and typical of Lake George. You know, we always have a lot up
every
there.
Week.
And yeah, and interestingly enough, our 9-year-old Airedale female just recently this past year has started to get anxious about fireworks, and she was never that way. So I don't worry about that with him. That I can control. It's just the whole idea of not being able to take him for a walk.
Yeah. So what's going on? Explain to me, what type of reaction is it? Is it consistent? Is it with dogs? Is it with people? What are you doing right now? What equipment are you using? Okay. Go over that.
Okay. He initially, when I tried to do this a couple of years ago, actually, after he finished, well, he finished way back, so I shouldn't use that as an excuse. He now is food driven, so I do take my treats out with me. If we're walking, if he sees a dog coming, he gets very tense. Long day.
Oh, yeah, I'm always just...
I can't imagine you even sleep. I've sensed from my handler have shown I have one of those slip collars for him.
Yep.
And have the slip going sideways so that I pull it this way.
Is it a slip collar or is it a slip leash?
Sorry. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Slip leash.
Okay, cool.
And so I can control him that way, and I talk to him. And depending if it's a person that's coming on the other side of the street, I will sit him down and talk to him, feed him, and let him watch this person go by. With the dog, it really just depends. If the dog does not respond to Ripley, he may be okay. But the minute that other dog makes any sound, then he pulls.
Does he bark?
Yes. Yes, and it's a nasty bark.
Okay. Is he intact?
No, not anymore.
Okay.
Once he finished his championship, we took care of that.
Okay. So if another dog is neutral and doesn't engage with him, then he is...
He might be...
Okay.
In fact, and I'm sure you've dealt with it, where the other side may think this is fun, and it's usually labradoodles that do this.
Mm-hmm.
They will almost, and understandably, they want to play or whatever, and that just triggers him automatically. You know, he just wants to chew that dog up. So I find myself, and he probably feels my anxiety. I will, if I see the dog coming, I start tensing myself, and I will. And I'll, you know, talk to him, but he probably feels my body language as well. So he's aware.
Yeah. Well, and the big thing with that is we tend to condition our dogs to react. They feel you're tense, but they feel a difference. So you're walking, enjoying your walk. You see a dog, and then all of a sudden, you're tight in the leash, and you're talking. So then the dog's looking at you and feeling this, like, what the heck's the deal? And then they see the dog. And so sometimes we can compound the reactivity and make it worse because they can feel that you're tense because you tell them. Like, it's not like a, you know, they're detecting heart rates. They're just, you're telling them. You're cranking up on the leash, and now you're, it's okay. And they're... So you have your slip leash on. So I have you know, been working now with leash reactivity for quite a bit of time, and I have a reactive dog myself, and it's given me a lot more insight because now, you know, I specialize in leash reactivity and it's my bread and butter. And now I have a 150-pound leash reactive dog that I get to sharpen my tools with every day. And so, and here's the thing is, and I wanted to share this with you because I think it's helpful and insightful in my opinion is, so I got him, he's an intact Borble, super, it's a type of a Mastiff. They're a very protective breed. That's why I got him. He's 150 pounds. He's all muscle. He's low to the ground. Just like is built for pulling cars, basically, this dog. So the thing is his lineage is protective. They are, I don't know you and I'm going to protect you. The day I brought him home at 8 weeks when he was just a little loaf of bread, he backed my Dutch Shepherd up. Bah, 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 bah. So that's his base. That's his genetics. He's never bitten another dog. My other Shepherd now will, you know, correct him and hammer into him and he cries and runs away. He's a big baby, really. But he's reactive and he's strong. And so I deal with it inconsistently with him. And that's the thing is it depends on the dog. So if I just want to walk you through like what I do with him. And the reason why I'm telling you this mainly is because sometimes you can't, once you get a dog and and Airedales aren't historically reactive dogs by any stretch, but you know, Borbles are, right? These big, protective, loud, powerful dogs. And so I don't fight with that, right? And so my point is I think with Ripley is he probably had developed this, you know, through time, right? Like genetics and other parts. It's nothing you maybe have done wrong or, you know, some dogs who have been attacked, they've had this trauma. I think that sometimes dogs just develop this. And so your job is to really have realistic expectations and to manage the situation. So that means, could you modify it to it never happening again? Likely not, because the success of the reactivity would be, let's just define that. I never want my dog to react again. Well, the problem is your dog's reaction is predicated off of other dogs. So same thing with my dog. If another dog ignores him, he's neutral. He doesn't really care. And, but if another dog kind of, he's got a really short fuse. So if he's kind of make mess with the bull, you get the horn. So if they just look at him wrong, he's like, let's go. Like that's just his personality, you know? So as you're working through this Ripley, my suggestion would be having a handful of exercises and techniques and methods and routines that you can do to manage the situation so it's not so stressful for everybody involved. Because some people reach out and their hope is like, I want to stop the reactivity. Part of dealing with a leash reactive dog is going to be to stop the reactivity. Once they start to build and react, I want you to shorten the duration of the reaction, but I don't think it's realistic for you to say, I don't want them to ever react again. It should just be, you know, the shortened distance of the reaction. Now with dogs who are, the caveat to that is, dogs who are fearful and insecure and just nervy, you actually have more likelihood of getting that behavior to be modified, right? Where they're just like, I don't know what to do. And then you correct them, you show them the right way, act like this, and you get paid. And then they're just like, ah, no biggie, right? I worked with a dog today. A couple drove in a father and daughter drove in from Michigan. And they have a dog that just is kind of nervous and insecure and doesn't really know what to do. And she's never been corrected. And she's looking around, she's barking at everything and her stress level's through the roof. I corrected her once or twice and it's pretty much it. But, but when you have a dog like Ripley or like my dog Burley, which I'm talking about, it's their genetic makeup to kind of give people the business. They won't back down. They almost look for it, right? I'm sure there's times where Ripley's minding his business and then somebody kind of barks at him and he just, yep, it's on, party on.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and just by judging by what you've told me, I just want to give you a clear roadmap so you're more successful. And part of that success is having realistic expectations, because, you know, that's what kind of screws everything up. So here's what I would do. Having good foundation is huge. So to give you an example, if we want a dog to stop pulling on the leash, we need to teach him heel. So if we want a dog to stop reacting, you know, we have to have a good leave it. So leave it is something that you can work on with food, toys, anything that the dog is interested in. Just having a disengagement command, you can't have that, is really helpful. And it's really easy to start to integrate and work on. All you do is you get their favorite food, put it in a bowl, treats, ball, toy, and you put them on a leash, and you start, you basically do impulse control thresholds. They go, hey, I want that. You go, ah, leave it, leave it. And eventually they learn that when you say leave it, they can't have that. And that's just a really easy way to get into the leave it work. There's a lot of nuances of, well, do you ever let the dog go get it? Is it okay if they get it? Are they never supposed to have it? And that's really discretionary. For me, if I tell a dog to leave it, it's because they have something and I don't want them to have it. Sometimes that's the Frisbee in the house. But when I go outside, they can have it. Sometimes it's one of my son's toys. Sometimes it's a dog. Sometimes it's a peanut butter jelly sandwich that my kid dropped on the ground. So leave it to me is really just what you're doing. You gotta come off of that. Stop doing that. You can't have that. So it'd be like almost a moving stay, you know? So they see something, they go, and you say you can't have it, and they stop. So leave it is something to start working on. Now, the leave it, when you have a dog that is strong-willed and is determined, they tend to sometimes fight through certain corrections. And equally, I mean, we see that, you know, in humans every day, right? It's like roll a stop sign. Nobody, you know, it's like, oh, you get pulled over. I didn't even realize I did it, because it's just not a thing, right? So I guess my point is sometimes the juice is worth the squeeze to the dog. So they see the food and they get a correction from a slip, they push right through it. Now, these are the realities that I've learned over the years. Like, it always comes up in almost every conversation I have with people, because I mainly do behavior modification. And the majority of people who have problems with behavior modification, like the people who drove from Michigan today, the dog's never been told no. So
Ripley's been told no.
Right, good. But they've never been told no in a way that they care about.
Right.
So I should rephrase that. If they've never been told no in the way that they care about. So the enforcement. So let's just to break it down for you. When a dog lunges to get something that they, so put it in, when a dog lunges to get something, whether it's food or react to a dog, their instinct and in their mind and their needs and their wants and their desires is, I want this. Rather, it's I'm hungry, or it's I want to go fight this dog, or, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's what they want to do. And so when you correct them, punish them, and hold them accountable, they have to care about the punishment, right? And if it's just a tap on the shoulder or whatever, and here's the thing, is every single dog is different, just like every person is different. Every person's genetic makeup is entirely different. What they eat, what their skin, I mean, everything is different. Every single thing is different. And with dogs, it's really no different than that. So the step before that is a step I'll talk about briefly, but it's just ineffective and not useful in reality, which is, why don't we just, you know, tell the dog no, and then they just stop doing it, and then we pay him after. It's like, okay, that is an option, but, you know, if you told your dog to, here's the reality. You told your dog to leave it. Ripley, leave it. Ripley said, nah, I gotta go. Like, I really don't like this dog. They're getting close. It's my yard. It's you. It's all the things. So then you said, well, I told the dog, leave it, and they didn't. It's like, do they know it? Absolutely. So are they just giving you the bird and saying, I don't care, I'm going? Yeah. So then that's when your discipline comes in, your correction comes in, your accountability comes in. You say, leave it. They push through it. And then you correct them. And so sometimes you kind of got to go up this ladder And this is just reality. I mean, I've heard different people talk in different camps that, you know, that really like to use positive reinforcement only. And I've heard them talk about things and it takes them 6 months to do something that takes somebody else 6 minutes. And even then, if the dog does push past that threshold of they've been conditioned for so long, I'm just not going to go because I want the food so much. But when you're dealing with different prey drives and different react, like a Borble, you're never going to get, they're too strong and too powerful and too strong-willed. Once they go, I mean, you need a prong collar. You need something to control that animal because they're so powerful unless you're going to go for a ride. So, So just think about that with Ripley. When you're going through this, this is just one state. I'm going to go through the whole process. But the first thing I like to talk about is telling the dog what you want them to do alternatively. So not necessarily saying, hey, I want you to stop reacting. That's kind of low-hanging fruit. But it's like, okay, what do you want them to do? Well, you got to teach them a command. You can't just tell them stop. No, you work on leave it. But you have to practice it, right? So it's like somebody who plays, I don't know, sports. Right? They practice the kick, they practice the throw, they practice the hitting, whatever it is. And then in the game, they use it. And you can hear parents and coaches, hit it. Oh, I know what that is, right? That's what I'm applying. This is the skill set that I'm applying here. So when you go out with your dog and you say, leave it, they're like, what the hell is that? And oh, by the way, I'm lunging now. So when you say, leave it, the dog needs to register. Oh, I'm not supposed to have this. I'm not supposed to be doing this. And then that way, when you correct them, they know it gives them the power. It's up to you. You either stop or you don't, right? Like you're going to make this uncomfortable for yourself unless you stop.
Now, just a quickie question there. When I'm taking, say I take him out into our backyard with a lead on, both sides of our property, there are dogs that are not reaction dogs. One could care less where Ripley is. The other one will respond only because Ripley has yelled at him, you know, barked at him. If I took him out on a lead and had him sit when, say, Rocco comes out, is that, and then just say, leave it with treats, is that even, I mean, that's part of the other thing is just wanting him to be out in the backyard and not have him constantly after those two dogs. I know he can't get to them, but he barks back and forth.
Yeah, well, so that is something you could absolutely do. Here's the thing that I tell my clients every day is a lot of people don't have the skill sets to achieve what you just said. So that would mean you want your dog to do a behavior, whether it's down or stay or leave it or recall off leash. So it's like, that's a big deal, right? So your dog's out there and they're just sniffing around, Ripley down. Okay. Come. Okay. Right. So that's a big deal. And that's something, again, most people, when they bring up this formula of, well, I got this dog and this dog, and it's really the same, kind of the same formula as, okay, you want your dog to not respond to these, you know, these things, right? So you're going against the dog's, what the dog wants to do. So the dog says, because dogs, you know, when you're dealing with property lines, they don't know that you've bought that and that's yours and that's your fence. And that's, they just think somebody's in our yard, mom. What are they doing here? Get them out of here. They don't know, like, you know, when you go out and you flip burgers in your backyard and your neighbor's out there, you're not like, what are you doing in my yard? It's like, no, that's theirs. Dogs don't know that. Yeah. So my answer is absolutely you can manually kind of program what you want your dog to do. But the caveat to that is you also have to have the skill sets to accomplish those things in reality. So that's like a level three. So again, I go out with Burley. He sees the Amazon. He sees the garbage trucks. He's doing a dog. He's doing a Ripley. Hey, I'm intrigued. Mm-hmm. You're not supposed to be in my yard. You're not supposed to be coming up my driveway. The kids are out. What are you postured up? I'm not going to say, what are you doing, Burley? I'm going to say, Burley, down. Zoop. Stay. Amazon guy just walks right by him. Thank you. So you have to, you know what I mean? So you have to have the, so a lot of people, I've been talking about this recently, is the stop it syndrome a lot of dog owners just, you know, like your car's making noise, your computer's not turning on, you just want to fix it. And with dog behavior, because it's, I mean, it's like kids. It's like, how do I stop this? You got to work with it, and you got to have alternatives, right? So when my kid screams, I said, what do we, you know, we got to teach. Don't just tell them not to scream. I mean, that's an option, but it's not going to be sustainable. You might holler at them and they stop real quick, but we say, hey, what are you frustrated about? What do you, so with Ripley, you can go out, Ripley on leash, Ripley sit. Good. There's a dog. He starts to bark. Leave it. You have that application. So same thing I told you right from the beginning of our conversation is, I think it's just having realistic expectations. I don't think I'm going to train Ripley with anybody. Doesn't matter who it is. Excuse me. I'm going to train with Ripley and he's not going to bark at dogs anymore. It's more about managing the situation. So the more skill sets you have and the more that they, so the more that they know it, which would be advanced, right? They can do it in any like professional way. So again, ideally, you let Ripley out back. He goes romping around. You're feeding the flowers or whatever. And boom, there's the next dog. And you, ah. So Ripley goes over there and he starts running up. You say, Ripley, come. And he's like, ah, I gotta, he comes back. Ripley down. And you're thinking, wow, that would be a dream. But the reality is all of that is obtainable. But the reason why people fail at that is because they try to do that in that situation. So they try to teach a behavior the dog isn't that familiar with or knows that well in the most chaotic and hardest situation to learn in. So alternatively, you would teach the recall outside of the other dog. And a lot of times we just teach it long line inside, super easy. You say, come, you pay him, come, you pay him, come, you pay him. Then what you do is you put a bowl of food down inside. You give him a break. He's on his long line. Your long line is the secret sauce here because it's your ability to hold him accountable, right? So he's over here. So he goes towards the bowl of food. You say, Ripley, come. He goes, your chopped liver, buddy. There's a pile of kibble right here. You correct him. Right. Pop the leash. He zips around. He comes back. You pay him. So then he goes, two things. You're going to correct me if I don't listen. Yep. That's a thing. Like you can't just blow me off. And that's a big thing with recall because recall is, you know, could be life threatening. Right? I tell that people all the time, like your dog's off, you let your dog off leash at a park and you think every, and then all of a sudden a deer comes out of the trail and starts running towards the road and you're freaking out. Right. Mm-hmm. I just saw a video yesterday of a German Shepherd chasing a wolf down in Yellowstone. I'm like, okay, there's a death sentence. But so you take the recall and you do this in the house and the dog knows that you're going to correct him if he doesn't listen. So there's consequences for this. Mm-hmm. It's psychology 101. You say, hey, come. Oh, I know what that is, but I'm not going to listen because there's alternative motive right here. There's this food here. Correction, uncomfortable, jarring, disruptive. Whoa, it's not supposed to be comfortable. That's the point of correction. If I was falling asleep and I went over to the thing and was like a melody, it wouldn't work, right? It's supposed to wake you up. So when you correct the dog, they come zipping back. Oh, sorry. You say, okay, let's try this again. Break, give the dog a break. They go, oh, food. Ripley, come. They turn around, no corrections. They go, I'm just going to come because you told me to and I don't want to get correction. Bang, they get all that food that was in their bowl in your pocket, right? Oh my gosh. So then you kind of have this, what you know, what I'm considered, right? It's like a balanced dog trainer, right? Now we have balance. When you listen, you get all the love and affection and the good stuff in the world. If you don't listen, there's consequences. It's that simple. So you start off with, we have to know the behaviors you want to apply. So we're going to go over the reactivity exercises in a moment when you're out in the walk because there are some exercises that you can do outside of trying to get skill sets down. But just to give you context on your dog thing, neighbors. Mm-hmm. So again, you go outside and you're minding your own business and then all of a sudden the dogs come out. That's where you would apply your obedience. Ripley come, Ripley leave it, Ripley down. But you have to start off, they have to master the behavior and then you build them up and then apply it to reality. And in reality for dog owners would be what I call level 3 dog, or I call a Yoda dog, would be asking your dog to do something off leash in a heavily distracted environment. And they know, I have to do this because I don't want to get in trouble. And at the end of the day, I get paid to do. So there's like hyper awareness and clarity. The dog wants to do something, you know, like the garbage man. And, you know, any day I go outside, my dog's like checking everyone's ID. He's scary as hell. He's a big dog. So I'm constant, like I put him in, I pull that lever a lot down, stay there. Don't scare the garbage man. Don't scare the yard man. Don't scare, you know, because he sounds big. And I mean, he sounds scary and he is scary and he's big. So my point is I don't walk around my neighborhood scratching my head going, I wonder what my dog's reactive. No, I have an intact, massive protective dog, period. So what I have to do is I have to manage it, right? And so Ripley could just be, he started getting older, started maturing. If you kept him intact, his testosterone, who knows? I tend not to like really focus on like the why, because you can't change it. Like, why? It's like, well, unless you plan on giving the dog back and getting a different puppy, but you know, that's not realistic. So now we go, okay, Ripley doesn't like other dogs. And if they bark at him and they react to him, he's going to snap, right? So Leavitt's the first one. And then here's the exercises that I do. So if you want, I can walk you through the best case scenario. Okay, so you're out for a walk with Ripley. And what I like to do is work on engagement. So again, somebody says, hey, I got a dog who's reactive. I say, okay, let me see you work your dog. And what I'm looking for is engagement. How much does your dog look at you? How much do they care that you're on the end of the leash? Will they stop when you stop? Are they in tunnel vision? Are they searching? Are they hunting? And most of the time, it's like all of the above, right? The dog's just like, you might as well just let go of the leash because they're just nose down and just pulling you and just completely disengaged. If you swap the leash with a dinosaur, your dog wouldn't know until you got back home. Like, oh, hey, who are you? You know? So what I like to do, and this is, you know, this is good for every dog, but this is really important and almost in my training is mandatory, is you just start with engagement. So you go outside and you do what I call a tune-up or a calibration. So what this means is your dog right now, when you go out, is going to be in front of you, nose to the ground, disengaged. This is just their normal, right? This is just what they do. And not paying attention, right? So think about it.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
Ripley's out. He's just constantly, I'm going to do what I want. I'm doing what I want. I'm doing what I want. Just ultimate freedom, which is totally okay under the right circumstances. I give dogs that freedom when I have the balance of when I say heel, the dog goes shoop, down, come, focus, look, left leg, right leg. Like when I have that, I let my dogs do whatever they want. Like my shepherd who's 9, she's off leash. The only time I tell her to do anything when we're on walks is when there's a car. I just tell her to stay. She sits there and she watches me stay. Car passes, brake, boom, she's gone. Other than that, she does what she wants because she deserves. She's earned it. She's earned that freedom. If I tell her to do anything, she'll do it. But I never have to pull that lever, you know, unless there's a car, right? It's because she's just I got lucky with her. So as you go out, start your walk with some engagement. So that means go out for your walk outside. Let the bathroom, you know, the potties, the pees and the poops, like that, all that happen. And then you start to go for a walk and you stop and you go the other way. Your dog's going to go, huh? The hell? Where are we going? We're not going back home. Is it raining? What's going on? And you just kind of do this back and forth, like a ping pong. Boop, 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 boop. And what I like to do, which is very successful, I just did it today, is I walk out, I say, Ripley, come, and I turn and I go the other way, and they go, this is my walk. I'm like looking for squirrels and chipmunks and a bunch of terrier stuff. So yeah. You turn, you go the other way. The dog continues to do, they kind of say, yeah, okay, correction, pop. And they hurry up to you. Like, what the hell? And you start walking. And they're starting to look at you, and then you turn, you go the other way. You're just doing, and it's, you know, 20 foot. It's not like you're dancing. You're just going back and forth. Hey, follow. And what you're doing is pay attention, pay attention, pay attention, pay attention. Eventually, what will happen is after you do, typically it's about four pops, 3 to 4 pops, depending on the sensitivity of the dog. And listen, I've done this with the cutest, most loving, most happiest 8-month-old golden retrievers that are just just the best, but they don't have any engagement. So once you kind of say, hey, pay attention to me, they're just sitting there wiggling like, well, okay, what else are we doing? But once you get that engagement, you're demanding attention. So what it does is it takes all that focus. So you go out with any dog, especially if you have a terrier or a Rottweiler or something, shepherds, like these dogs who are just working, these border collies and these heelers, and these Aussies, like they're just out and they're just like busy, 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 busy. And if you don't kind of stick a fork in the spokes there and go, wait a minute, can you take all that and put it on me? I'll put you to work. Let me put you to work. Dogs, as you know, if you let them, they will put themselves to work, right? They'll chase neighborhood cats and chase squirrels, and that's just what they do. So what I like to do is that calibration, or I call it both, tune-up calibration. Yep. And all I do is I bounce back and forth. And the key is you turn, Ripley, come. He goes, nope, correction. Go the other way, Ripley, come, correction. By the third or fourth time, I can almost promise you, you say, come, no correction. Whoop, he's right with you. Gotcha. Where are we going? And then you start bouncing.
Treat?
Sure. You can. Treats are just another tool. In the beginning.
The tune-up. I mean, should I try with the treats or just go without them initially and see?
I would go without them in the beginning. Okay. Because I really want the dog to pay attention to you. So, because here's where that will go wrong. I use positive reinforcement. Sometimes I just, what I call them, external rewards. So use your internal rewards. Good. Good, mm-hmm. Right? Just good. So you say, Ripley, come. Good, come. Right? You can, like, the treats are awesome. I use them every day with every dog. However, they're so powerful that sometimes they create a facade. Right? You go, hey, your dog's not listening to me. Crack open a bag of treats and now they're like your best friend. And it's, if you separate, you know, if you kind of itemize, is it you or is it the food? And I like to be me first, then the food. Oh, and by the way, good job. Whoa, sugar on top, cherry on top. Mm-hmm. This is great. Not only did you look at me and tell me I was a good boy and patted me on the side and I got a piece of food. So treats are great. I want you to use them. Don't be afraid to use them. It's just in the beginning, do this little, hey, it's like checking a horse, right? You're just, all you're doing is you're just, hey, pay attention to me. Pay attention to me. I'm going this way. Boom, boom, boom. And then all of a sudden, about the third or fourth time, the dog will start looking. You'll start to see the dog looking at you like, what the hell? Because what happens is they go, if I don't look at you, I'm going to get corrected. And I don't know where you're going to go. So then it demands that attention. And then you start looking at the dog. Good. Yes. And they go, well, this is great. You turn. Then, so once you start getting hyper focus, right? So really good focused healing, like the dog starts looking at you. And then you can, good. Now you can really start to put that food in. Good heal. Now you're thinking. So instead of coming out and just being disengaged and, mm-hmm. nose down the whole time, right? Because that's what happens. As the dog comes out, they disengage the whole time. They see a dog. You start to, here we go. And they go, here we go. So that's the first thing. Get engagement. Do you have a release or a break command?
Release or break? What do you mean?
I mean, when you tell your dog to break, do they know what, the answer is no, but here's what I do with all my clients. And it's very simple. When I tell my dog to heel, for an example, to sit, for an example, to down, to place, at the end of that, I'll use a break or a release command to say, okay, you're done with this command, right? So if I say sit, I'll say, okay, break. And then they can go off and do what they want. Kind of like a terminal marker, but what you're doing here is at the end of your sequence of behaviors, if you say break in a release, that means you're free. You can do what you want. Now, to most people, to be honest, unless you see it in person, the break command is pretty confusing. You're like, I don't understand. But I use it every day with my dogs. I use it a lot with my clients to just create clarity. So I'm out with a dog and I say, Ripley, heel. He's walking next to me. He's in a heel. We're walking nice. I stop. He gave me all the engagement and attention. I paid him with his favorite food. I say, break. Now he can be on the left of me and the right of me and in front of me. He can go over here and he can sniff. He can pee. He can disengage. Kind of like that recess. Do what you want. But it's discretionary though. You're not going to bark. You're not going to react. You're not going to drag me. But you don't have to be right next to me paying attention at attention. Okay. So the break command is really nice to have. So the break command is very simple. Don't overthink it. Don't overwhelm yourself. Just at the end of whatever behavior you do with your dog, you got to, like some people use free. Free. Okay. They say, okay. So I just use break because it just makes more sense to me. So once you start getting engagement, the dog's looking at you, you stop. Then you start working on your heel. So your heel is going to be the dog at your heels. The heel command for every dog trainer is going to be different. For me, it's the dog on a loose leash at my heels in motion. I'm just out. I just don't want you to pull on this leash. I want you to stay right at my heels. Mm-hmm. So I say heel. I go 1, 2, 3, 4. I stop. The dog's looking at me. Food. Break. So pay. Break. Kind of make a sandwich. Do this. Mm-hmm. And at the end, you can get a break. So what this does is it creates clarity on the leash. It creates expectation. So again, I don't try to stop my Borble from being a Borble and being protective and bark. People come in, even if it's my in-laws, which he loves and he's known his whole life. He's ripping around the corner with his chest puffed up and his hackles. And I go down. And he's still looking around the corner, growling. His hackles are up. He's down. And then, you know, and then when he smells him, he's like, you know, his little nub goes. And so my point is if I didn't have those skill sets, this dog, I'd have to give him back. I'd have to return him. And that's why I see so many powerful dogs end up in the shelters. It's if you don't have the skill sets to handle a big dog like that, you're screwed, really. So my point is with Ripley, once you start to develop the heel, for an example, you're out for a walk, you say heel. So that means the moment he pulls past your heels, he gets a correction backwards. Ah. I usually do like a.
I do too. Yeah.
Perfect. Correct him. Now here's an important piece. You have to really pay attention. When you say ah and you correct them, does he go, oh crap, and get back into place? Or does he kind of just go, eh, and shrug it off? And it's not a question to you. It's just something to watch. If you feel like, and here's the common thing, is if there's nothing else going on, the correction, the, hey, you better not, works. If there's nothing else going on. Kind of like when people go, I got my treats out, but he still reacted. It's because the other dog was more value, like for him, it was more valuable for him to bark at the dog. You're trying to trump all that with something else to really disrupt what he's doing. He doesn't care about it. right? Just doesn't care. So audit that in your own time and figure that out. But when you're out for a walk and you go, ah, ah, and you say, hey, here's your punishment for pulling past my leg. And he goes, I don't care about this. Then you ladder up to different equipment. It's extraordinarily common for that to happen. And I just worked with a dog today and I went through three different collars until I figured out, and I went up and down the ladder trying to figure out what's going to be best. And then we landed on the slip collar, a slip leash like you have. But every dog's going to be different, right? So just keep that in mind, because that's really important. Because you may say, Tom, to the T, I followed your course and I followed this and I did that and I heard everything you said and you told me to correct the dog and I did. But the caveat to this is if the dog doesn't care about the correction, all the steps that come after that that you've been paying close attention to and you're very detail-oriented aren't going to matter. It's like baking a cake without eggs or sugar or flour. It's like you missed an important piece. That's why, during Christmas, I make spaghetti homemade pasta. And I remember this one time I kept making it and it just would not come out. It's because I was doing two eggs instead of three. So just little things, because it makes a huge difference. You're like, I can't do anything with this dough. So when you're training, it's very, very similar that the equipment is important. And I'll say this. In the beginning, the equipment is very important because you're trying to build a foundation. Now, as a dog owner, I don't want you to think that the equipment is forever. But in the beginning, when your dog goes, I'm going to test these waters. You told me to heal. We've been working on that. I know what it is, but there's a dog around the corner. They pull and you correct them. And they go, that's all you got? Easy. I'm going to take the pull. I'm going to take the correction, right? So the sustainable and the overall macro or bigger picture objective is for when you go, ah, ah, the dog goes, ooh, and you don't have to touch him on the leash. You don't have to touch him on the collar. And in fact, I want you to get to, and I know that you can, get to a point where you just, ah, and the dog comes right back without even any equipment, right? So again, you're barking. If the dog knows, you know, like when I was a kid, my mom just had to look at me a certain way. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm in trouble. That was it. It's all I needed, right? So you want your dog to, because there's going to be so many times where you're going to tell them to do something. They don't want to do it. I would much rather fence fight with the neighbor's dog. I would much rather react to this doodle reacting to me. They don't want to listen to you, right? Like you have to step in to do something that's going to disrupt and intervene with something that they care about, right? So it's like the very, very beginning of positive reinforcement training. So you go, hey, if you come back to me, you get paid. Okay, that's great for development. Everybody needs to do it. If you come to me, you get paid. But the reality is once you apply, hey, if you come to me, you get paid, they're like, yeah, but if I bark, I get the dog. Boom. Now you're playing this game of, it's a system of economics, right? Because now they're like, well, here's the value. Here's the ROI on, if I come to you, I get a beef liver. If I react to the dog, I get all this adrenaline and dopamine and yeah. So heel, break. Okay. Sorry, back up. Tune up, heel, break. So pay attention to me. Okay. Now I have your attention. Walk nicely next to me. Okay. Break. My suggestion is to do these, you know, it takes a couple of weeks to get this down, but I want you to have the ability to apply skill sets. And the dog, Ripley's going to go, I want to do this. You go, but you got to heal. Because that's the thing is, if your heel's really good, like I do that, excuse me, with my dog, I'll go out, he'll lock in on a dog that I've never seen before in the neighborhood. Maybe they're a dog walker from, I don't even know. There's just people who come into my neighborhood. I don't know where they come from. And he'll lock in and I'll say, leave it. Mm-mm, doesn't care. I'll say, look, focus. I got food, right? That's what I'm saying. Focus. Because he knows if he focuses, he gets paid. But he sees this new dog and he's locked. And I could take that prong collar and as hard as I can, whang, and he just doesn't care. He's locked. He's like, no. Intruder alert. New dog alert. So what I do is what I was going to tell you next, is an inside turn. Huge. I can attest to it. I don't give anybody information that I haven't tried myself that it doesn't work. I can tell you that because it's a waste of time. So the inside turn, so let's say your dog is on your left side. You're in a heel. You're walking. They start to build. You feel like, A, the dog came on fast out of nowhere, and you don't have time to start deactivating things.
Yeah.
So do an inside turn. You're going to take your left leg. You're basically going to cut his head off, right? So his eyes are looking right at the dog, and he starts to build. You take your left leg. You turn right inside to him. And you walk back the other way 5 to 10 feet, and you do it again, kind of like your tune up, except you're not letting him hit the end of the leash. You are manipulating where his body goes, where his head goes, where his eyes go, with your leg. So you're just kind of doing this tune up inside. Does that make sense?
No, hold on.
Sure.
Thank you.
Ripley showing himself.
Well, somebody is out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my only concern with doing that would be that he, you know, they're strong animals, and he would question my turning that way, or he would manipulate around me.
So, and he could. Absolutely. Here's how to help with that. So a lot of times what ends up happening is you try to play this catch-up game, right, where your hands, you stack, and you just play this game. So you go forward, they go forward, you go forward. No, don't do that. So I slow everything down because the heel, like again, you're going to work on the tune-up, you're going to work on the heel, all these things. But the heel is, when I slow down, you slow down. When I speed up, you speed up. When I stop, you got to stay at my heels, regardless of if I'm going fast or not. So when you turn inside, what I a lot of times do is do a back pressure. So I'll just give the dog pressure to the back. Like I'll just pull back on the leash like a horse. They go backwards, mm-hmm. right? So if I see a dog if Burly, my dog, sees a dog and all of a sudden he pops up and I can just tell this isn't going to be a leave it. This isn't going to be a focus. He is, and it's 1 out of 10, I would say. I would say I walk him 2 to 3 times a day, and I would say maybe once a week, he just gets a stray hair and he's just that dog. And I'm like, okay. So one of the things that's super helpful from a massive, large dog, just turning right inside to him and just walk. Every now and then he'll look back, and you're not going home. You're not going the other way. You're just going 10 feet out and you go back. And then you do it again. You start to go up. He starts to load, inside turn. And so what you're doing is you're de-escalating his focus on the other dog, because his eyes are the things that are going to really build him up, right? So mm-hmm. so that's super helpful. Work with that. And that's something you could do tonight. You don't need a heel for that. You don't need a tune up. If he starts mm-hmm. to build and you feel like you're losing leverage, turn inside to him and cut him off.
Okay.
The other thing that I like to do is, especially for bigger dogs, if you feel like you're losing the power strength here, which, you know, with a lot of big dogs you do, is a down. So if you have a really good down, I pull that lever a lot with Burly when I'm on the walk. If he does do that lock in on that one dog, there's nothing like I can't even like explain to you how just numb this dog is to anything. Like there's nothing I can do to break him. But if I can get, like, I have this cheat code where I can say down, and he'll fold into a down, and he'll just stare at this dog. And as long as the dog is far enough away, he's not going to lunge or anything. He just downs, right? So the down is helpful. I like to use down because it allows you to control the situation safer, especially if there's another person who's like, oh, we're just friendly and they want... Mm. You're just like down, and then you get right in front of your dog, you body block, and you wait for them to pass. So those are some really effective things that have been helpful for me today, tonight, after I get the phone, I'm walking them. It's the same thing. I pull those levers. And here's the thing. My dog is very trained. He listens to different languages. He knows what he needs to do. It doesn't. He's always going to be reactive. That's not going to change. It's what he is. So I don't go around going, oh, we had a reaction. I'm like, oh, what could I have done better? You know, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But when I go out, I have a toolbox of things. And I got to tell you, like I said before, and I'm not trying to toot my horn, I'm just putting things into perspective. I specialize in behavior modification and leash reactivity. Like, that is my bread and butter. Been doing it for over a decade. This dog gives me a run for my money all the time. When I travel, I have a rule with my dog walkers and people who stay and with my dog. If you see a dog, turn around and go the other way. Because this dog takes a full-time professional to keep out of trouble. And the thing is he's, when he was a puppy, he would kind of do the same thing, and I'd let him go up to dogs because everyone thought he was cute and he was small. And he doesn't do anything. He just sits there and he postures and he's like, oh, okay. And then he has dog friends. He plays. He's never like bitten a dog or gone out, like tried to hurt a dog. He's just, I want to let you know how big and bad I am. And it's just like this, it's classical leash reactivity. So there's a difference. Leash reactivity is when a dog is held back and gets really frustrated that they can't go check that person's ID or that dog. I've had the nicest dogs that go to my daycare have really bad leash reactivity because they're just like, I need to get to you. And then the other side of that is just like leash aggression, right? Which is more of, I'm trying to hurt you. I'm trying to get to you. I don't like you. If I do get to you, I am going to hurt you. And I've had those dogs personally myself as well. So, but when you have a large dog, it's stressful, you know, because when you go out, well, I guess with any reactive dog, but when you go out, you're like, I hope I don't run into a dog. For me, I get really excited because I'm like, yes, I get to work on this. And I want you to, but I can understand if you don't have a game plan.
Yeah.
You're shooting in the dark.
The sad thing is, and actually how I first heard about you, we live on a peninsula in Lake George, Cleverdale, and this one couple had their dog, and I ran into them maybe 2 years ago, and they told me about you. Ran into them again this summer, and the difference in the dog, and they tooted your horn, and you know, how wonderful it all was. I could not believe the difference in that dog.
Cool.
From... yeah, last time I saw him. And this little peninsula is wall-to-wall dogs. Mm. And my goal at some point is not to put him in the kennel when we go up to the lake, which is what we do. Our female can go. She's fine. But Ripley, until I get this under somewhat control, it's not going to be worth it for me to take him up there.
Yeah.
It's sad.
Yeah, it is. It's sad for everybody, you know, because it stresses you out. Like, hey, I want to go up to the lake house. It's like, oh, let's get all the stress. We're going to put Ripley. Is it going to go? Is he not going to go? So my suggestion is your homework is work on the things I told you. I have I have a leash reactivity course that not only goes over all this, but it shows you it with a real dog. So I put it into course form. It's called a reactive to neutral course.
Okay.
And all you have to do is go ahead.
Is it online?
Yeah. TomDavisCourses.com. Pretty simple. TomDavisCourses.com. And it's a whole process in leash reactivity. So it's like what I just told you, but you can listen to it and watch it at your own, you know, your pleasure, and you don't have to sit down and do the whole thing at once, but it really just gives you, like when I tell you about the inside turn, the equipment, because I think you probably have to go up in equipment, I would assume, because right now he's just kind of like, I don't care what you say. So it goes over how to go up, when to go up, what to go up to, what size, the inside turns, shows you how to do all that stuff. And then, and it's really just, you know, my job is to just teach people the why and then show them how to do it and then them do the homework. So really, you just got to put in the work. That's where you're going to see the real results. It's not dogs by Tom. It's humans by Tom. You know, the dogs are the easiest part of my job. Like they're, you know, within.
It's the humans.
Yeah, because, I mean, you've done all the things. You know, you're in your own habits. And I tell my clients all the time, I go, you're going to keep doing this. I'm going to keep telling you, put your arm down, look up, stop talking, blah, 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 you know? So your homework is, you could take that course, which will give you, but I think you probably should move up to like a plastic pinch collar or a prong collar. Because if you get into a tug of war, let's say you go out and he pulls and he lunges and now you're just hanging on instead of correcting. So here's what I tell people, give you perspective. When you go out for a walk and your dog reacts, in that moment, you're trying to figure out how to handle the situation and fix it and modify it and manage it and make it better. And but the reality is that's your only – that by the time your dog locks, loads, and then reacts, you have anywhere from 20 to 5 seconds depending on the dog. And a lot of times people are just so nervous that they just are like – don't get to the dog, don't get to the dog. They forget about the inside turn, the drawback recall, the leave-its. You know, they forget all that stuff. So what happens is if you have a piece of equipment that enables your dog, if you say, hey, heel, and the dog goes, screw you, bang, you never really have an opportunity to work on leash reactivity because you're so focused on don't pull me down, don't get to the other dog, don't slip the, you know, don't, the leash doesn't, can't come out of my hands. And then by the time you're over, you're so stressed and like frustrated and upset. And the thing is you're never going to get better because you didn't work. What you just did was hang on. So,
yeah.
So you just have to remember that. Like when you go out and you say, hey, Ripley, leave it. And he goes, psht, and he's blowing this. So you're basically saying, if you don't stop pulling, this is going to happen. He goes, I don't give a crap about that. That's a problem, right? It's like giving somebody a tiss-tiss when they rob the bank. Everybody be robbing the bank, right? It's like, no, you're going to go to jail for life or might be get shot. So anyway, I would just say that is a big problem with people who have reactive dogs is when they give the dog the consequence of reaction. React or else, and the or else is nothing to them. Because a lot of times they know what they're doing is wrong, like Burley. He knows, he knows. He's looking at me like, I'm going to do it. And I'm like, well, I'm going to correct you. And sometimes he's like, well, I don't care. And then it is, you know, the whole thing. It happens, you know. So that's it.
It's reassuring to know that even the professionals have some difficulties at times.
I'm telling you, it's a challenge. And it's not... It's just sometimes the dog that you have. It's like kids. Like you get one kid that's like shy and reclusive and you have to like, come on, talk. And then you get the next kid that's doesn't shut up, you know? And it's like, it's genetics. It's...
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You get it. So my point is with Burley, and I tell people, that's the reason why I told you is I want you to understand, like I can relate to you. Before I got him, I was an expert in leash reactivity at the highest level, and now I even know more about it, right, because of him. And so, you know, I always joke around about part of the reason I got him is because I wanted protection to my family, but the other part, and truthfully, and I've said this publicly many times, is I wanted the most challenging dog I've ever worked with. So I've had clients who have had Borbles before, and I said, this is the most rewarding dog I've ever worked with, because once you break through, they're your best friend, and now you have like a giant buddy, and it's like, and it was so hard to get in, and they're so hard to read. They whale eye and they stiffen up, and it's just a really difficult dog. And so, yeah. So I just tell people when I brought him home at 8 weeks, he just was, I have it on my YouTube. You can see it. He's just this little backing up my shepherd, and she's looking at me like, what the hell is this? And just his genetics. And so, he's trained, he listens, he knows better, but I'm not going to stop. I'm not going to tell that fish not to swim. When he goes, he's like, I'm going. I'm not scratching my head going, what the hell, why are you doing this? I'm like, I know why you're doing this. It's like a shepherd that barks. So why is a shepherd barking? I'm like, it's just what they do. It's just they bark, they're vocal, you know?
Oh, yeah, for the Airedales. Tom, one last thing. Sure. I know we're out of time here. The reactive leash course. Mm-hmm. If I get on your website, it'll show that course.
Yeah. If you go to tomdaviscourses.com,
okay.
Yeah. There's only like, we have the master the walk, which is the which should mean to be nice for you too. We have them in bundles too. So if you're like, hey, I need the leash pressure and then that, but it's the Master the Walk, Leash Reactivity, e-collar, and the Kickstarter. And you'll see on there, there's a lot of bundles too, if you wanted to save money and get them together. But yes, it's on Tom Davis courses.
Those two would be good.
Say it again.
From what you're just saying, maybe those two courses would be good.
I agree.
Kind of reinforce my
teaching the heel, Master the Walk. Yeah. The Master the Walk teaches you the heel, and then the Leash Reactivity goes over all the Leash Reactivity stuff. So yeah, I would agree. And there is a package there. If you buy them in a package, you save money.
Okay. All righty. Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
You're welcome.